8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order, and we do not have a quorum yet. First bill on the agenda originally was scheduled for House File 2530, but Representative Schultz is a little bit under the weather, so she will not. We will be doing that bill on another day. So we're going to start with Chair Davids first on House File 2628, and again, Chair Davids, we can't make a motion yet, so if you want to go ahead and explain your bill, we can go from there.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I hope Representative Schultz makes a quick recovery here. What House File 2628 does is extends the filing deadline for estimated tax payments from the third month to the fourth month, and very simply, Mr. Chairman and members, this lines up with the federal code. I appreciate your support.
Very good. I see you have a testifier.
Mr. Chairman, she's a resource.
Very good. So,
you know what that means?
Yeah.
Is there anyone from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 2628? See none. Anyone from any members? Questions? Chair Davids, any closing comments? I think people want to get to the next bill.
I don't blame them, Mr. Chairman. Fine piece of legislation. I appreciate your support when you have a quorum.
Very good. And when we get that quorum, we will make the official motions as need be. So thank you very much.
And really, Mr. Chairman, members, this should have been House File 1. But
very good. Yes, I'm sorry we missed it by 2,627. But all right. Very good. So we don't quite have a quorum yet, but we have two bills covering the same item. But the tiebreaker here is, if you've seen what Representative Robbins has brought for us. So that is the tiebreaker. She will present her bill first. And so, Representative Robbins, thank you so much. Representative Sock will join her at the table. But when we get a quorum here, we will move Representative Robbins' bill first. But we don't have a quorum yet. But we will. I think we have a quorum now. We do. All right. So let's catch up on some business before we go any further. So the first thing we have are Tuesday, March 26, 2019 minutes. Any motion? Representative Lestigard moves the March 26, 2019 minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, I will call for the vote on the March 26, 2019 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail, and the minutes are approved. Now, Chair Davids, would you like to move your bill?
I'll move my bill, Mr. Chairman, House File 2628, for possible inclusion.
Very good. So, Representative Davids moves to lay over House File 2628. For possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Very good. So, who would like to move Representative Robbins' bill? Any? Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 1445 for probable inclusion.
Thank you very much. Is that greater than possible, probable, like reasonable, probable cause?
You know, Mr. Chair, I'm a fine teacher. I'm not sure.
Representative Robbins, Representative Fabian has moved your bill for probable inclusion or possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for the goodies that you've brought today.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for hearing the bill, sir.
Very good.
Thank you, members.
Please proceed.
Good morning, members. I am pleased to present House File 1445, which would provide an alternative simplified credit opportunity for the research and development tax credit. It's similar to a credit that's currently available in federal law that would allow businesses a different way to calculate the research and development tax credit. This was a bill carried last year by Representative Sarah Anderson, and is currently also being carried by my colleague, Representative Salk. And I believe it's fairly non-controversial. Several other states have this alternative simplified credit option for businesses in their states, and I think it would do a lot to promote competitiveness and spur research here in Minnesota.
Very good. Representative Salk, anything you want to add right now?
The only thing I would add would be that I think we all are cognizant of and know how important research is to the state, both in all of the different levels. We have a high level of tech and health in Rochester. Two corporations, one that puts out patents as if they were the day's work. It's an amazing kind of place to have, and that business is there. Those have found an environment in Minnesota which is together with the policies of Minnesota and the workforce in Minnesota to find success. Yes. It spreads across all the different industries that are deep into research.
Very good. Before we take questions from members, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 1445 or the soon-to-be House File 1455? Welcome. Please state your name for the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Dukic. I'm with the Minnesota High Tech Association. We are a trade association that represents 300 science technology companies throughout the state of Minnesota. And I'm here to testify in support of House File 1445 and 1455. Minnesota's story is one of innovation. From the invention of the pacemaker to the post-it note, these inventions have helped shape new industries here in the state, and we can look to our past successes for a blueprint to the future. Our medical device and software industries have flourished because of research and development. Indeed, Minnesota has been on the forefront of research and development and R&D policy. In 1982, we were the first state to enact an R&D tax credit modeled after the federal credit, and since its enactment, the legislature has enhanced Minnesota's R&D tax credit. However, the tax credit can be complex and time-consuming for some companies to administer, relying either on research activities conducted during the 80s or a fixed base to determine the credit. Research, however, is dynamic, and just like the research and development tax credit isn't a one-size-fits-all endeavor, neither is the R&D tax credit. The proposed alternative simplified credit mirrors the federal alternative simplified credit and provides a simple method for calculating the credit. The alternative simplified credit calculation can be done in relatively few steps and requires only the current year's qualified research expenses and those expenses in the prior 3 years. This approach is more straightforward for the company to follow and allows for a company to claim the research and development tax credit in a manner consistent with the federal alternative simplified credit, thereby reducing the administrative burden. States like Texas, Wisconsin, and Massachusetts all have alternative simplified credits, and if we don't offer competitive incentives here in Minnesota, we risk losing our most cherished industries and stunting the growth of emerging industries and companies. And with that, we ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I regret I didn't take time to look it up, but I seem to remember that we had an Office of Legislative Auditor study on this particular tax credit, and it really had some real criticisms about whether it really achieved the policy goals that it was designed to, and I'm wondering if our testifier might give any rationale for why this change, which increases the cost of it, would address or not address any of those issues.
Mr. Dukic.
Well, I think this bill in particular, Mr. Chair and members, makes it easier for companies to calculate the credit, and therefore makes it a little easier for companies to use the credit. And with that, I think we can encourage more companies will be encouraged to use the credit.
Representative Walsh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I'm always more outcome-focused rather than ease of calculation. It's a tremendous benefit for those who use it right now. So if they have to spend a few extra hours with or paying for accounting services, that's a trade-off. I don't mind streamlining things, but I wish we were also addressing the outcomes. And I'm always kind of surprised by Medtronic always being brought up and the pacemaker. And the pacemaker was invented in an incredibly modest garage in my district by a fellow who worked for the University of Minnesota, who are a researcher because of a child's risk during a power outage, said, can you come up with something? And he came up with something in his garage, not with major investments in R&D, not that that doesn't lead to other ideas and the development and enhancement of them, but I always think it's one of the worst examples of R&D leading to something, because it's actually one of the most charming stories we have in my community of how an ordinary person living in a very, very humble house in a very humble neighborhood can actually save lives. And the nicest part of the bow around that story is that the inventor of it actually had his own life lengthened by his own invention later in his life.
Any other questions?
Can I get one of the
Representative Westengard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, what makes this different than the other credit or the other R&D credit? Or could you answer that one?
Mr. Dugich?
Mr. Chair, members, this credit is an alternative. It's an elective credit, so the state's current R&D credit remains intact. This is an elective for companies to use if they choose to. But as on lines 1.7 to 1.13, that's the state's current R&D tax credit. Lines 1.14 and 1.15 include the proposed alternative simplified credit. And so the difference is in the method of calculation.
Representative Westengard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what isn't working with the existing credit?
Mr. Dugich.
Mr. Chair and members, the existing credit requires a look-back period to the 80s or a base rate to calculate the credit. And so if companies don't have data available from the 80s or weren't around in the 80s, that becomes administratively difficult for them to carry out.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if doing the look back to the 80s isn't the right approach, then why wouldn't we change the way that the R&D credit operates rather than adding this additional alternative minimum?
Mr. Dukich.
Mr. Chair, members, this proposal does change the way that the R&D credit would operate by providing an alternative simplified credit, which is an elective credit for companies to use.
Representative Gomez.
Right. I understand that it's an alternative minimum. I'm saying that if this is the right mechanism, not the look back, then why don't we change the way that the R&D credit functions, like, to this method of calculation, period, for everybody?
Mr. Dukich?
Mr. Chair, members, as I mentioned in my testimony, research is dynamic and changes, and so this alternative simplified credit provides a method for companies to calculate the credit based on their a more straightforward approach. It's not that the current method doesn't work, per se. It's just that it doesn't necessarily work for all companies in the same way.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I felt like Representative Loeffler, maybe this is for the author, Representative Loeffler's point about the OLA report that we received kind of early in our time here in the Taxes Committee. My understanding of the kind of conclusions of that report were that it didn't have the impact on job creation that was intended when the R&D credit was designed, and furthermore that we weren't able to discern whether the credit actually like acted as an incentive or pushed companies to engage in R&D activities that they would not have otherwise done if not for the credit, and that we were possibly, you know, providing this credit to companies that would have engaged in that research whether the credit was there or not. And so given those points made by the OLA, I guess, you know, I mean, that was early on in our time here, but I was just thinking about, you know, I think that one's $50 million, and what's this, another 20 or so per year. And so I was thinking about, what, you know, if you were going to spend $50 to $75 million with the intent of creating jobs and spurring companies to engage in research activities they would not have otherwise done, it seemed as though we needed to look at the design of the R&D credit period and see if it was the right way to go. So I guess that's sort of an observation, but I would love it if you had any thoughts about that, because that was the first OLA report I'd ever actually like read, but it looked like it was saying this doesn't work the way that it is supposed to work. So y'all should look at like whether you should be doing this period. So I guess I'm sort of surprised to see us thinking about spending another, you know, 20 to 25 mil a year on it when that was the conclusion of the OLA.
So Representative Robbins or Representative Sauk want to respond to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, representatives. So I did also read the OLA report on this, and the data from that report cut off at 2014. So then I, working with Mr. Clayman and some others, got some additional updated numbers. And first of all, I do agree that the OLA had some recommendations that should be considered. They really recommended that I don't believe has been done. I'm a freshman as well, so I don't know if a previous legislature did any of the reporting that the OLA suggested. But they did suggest that Department of Revenue collect and maintain data sufficient to allow periodic review. And I think, I'm not sure if that's being done, but that would be certainly something for the committee to consider. But in the more recent data in 2017, it showed that there was a 50.2 million increase I'm reading the wrong thing. And there were looked like a 50.2 million increase in credits and 18.5 in the individual tax in the individual side, not the corporate side. And that really did lead to increases in research and development, and that they talk about the spillover effects of the research. So it's not just the benefit to the company, but the benefit to the larger community. And I think we've seen that in Rochester and many other places. And it's tied directly to Minnesota-based research. So this is funding high-level, high-skilled research jobs here in Minnesota for research conducted in our state. And I think that's very important to consider, that these companies, many of them are, they have a footprint all over the world, but this incents them to do that research here in Minnesota, and it also keeps those high-skilled, high-level jobs of, you know, PhD-level research here in Minnesota. And I think that's a great benefit to our communities as well as our whole state. And I also think that going forward, you know, we have to be cognizant of our competition. Texas has this. Iowa just started this. Massachusetts has this. In this high-tech space, those are some of our main competitors. And if we don't play ball, I think those research jobs could easily move to another state because this focuses on research done in Minnesota, and I think that's good for us.
Representative Sauk, anything you care to add to that?
I would like to bring up, and maybe it's just a different way that I don't want to necessarily talk to the dollars and cents in the fiscal, but more about what has happened in terms of the work environment and the spaces around these places that are using this credit that are just buried in long-term high-end research. There's lots of noise and lots of cheerleading going on about what's going on in Rochester. But I've lived there since 81, and in all of that time, I've watched year after year after year of announcements about the incredible research-based improvements that are taking place. Right now, I don't know how many of you watch this, but for a quirky reason, it's one of the things that goes across my radar, is we currently have the world's fastest supercomputer being manufactured and a result of the research that takes place down here in Rochester, that whenever that's announced, that's essentially that lab is going back and forth with China, and I think there's probably one in Europe, but that gets in once in a while. But they're going back and forth, and it's a game of research and who can push the envelope the farthest. Well, that's the kind of very, very high-end research. So what does that mean to us as we're living somewhere? It means that there's an extraordinary concentration of high-tech manufacturing that takes place and the advisory to the rest of the companies around that raise the bar on how to deal with that. Then we have our other big monster in town that's doing health research and that sort of thing. And that level of research is the kind of thing that obviously we don't see bopping up in central Iowa or popping up in other states and that sort of thing. It's very concentrated in a very few locations. And I think most of you could list all of the high-end health research places on one hand because they are that focused and they are that important. So that's why I really think that these are worth culturing, and that's one of the things that this does. This cultures the environment and the type of place where high-end research takes place. Another, just aside, I happen to go through the plant down at IBM every once in a while, and it is a surreal experience. So you walk down there, you see maybe a guy from your church, you sit down, you're going to have coffee with him and chat about, you know, this maybe new whatever they've decided. He starts talking quantum theory to you. Now, as it turns out, I knew what the words meant, and I sort of had a concept of what we were talking about. But that's a strange environment. That kind of an environment isn't cultured everywhere and easily. So I think that us putting this very focused effort into making certain those environments are here in Minnesota and are cultured, I think is definitely worth it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins.
If I might add, I also wanted to point out that according to this research report, several states that have the research and development tax credit, their rates are higher than our first. We have the existing first two tiers. They're higher than our first tier and our second tier. And some states, for us, the credit is incremental. It's only applied to new research over what they've done over the last 3 years. But other states, they apply it to all amount of R&D spending by these companies. So our credit is considered modest by what other states are doing. I just wanted to point that out.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as we look at this, all these bills are doing is creating an alternate calculation. They can stay the old way if they want to, but this provides a new way, which is also the federal government allows. So this would match up, both calculations would match up with what the feds are allowing on that. And especially in IBM, I mean, House File 1455, for example, the David Salk bill, Salk David's bill. My press release says David Salk. I don't know what that means, but I was just thinking about IBM, and I think their first customer for that supercomputer was Jimmy John's because it's freaky fast. But with that being said, this is some very serious stuff. This is something that the researchers at IBM and other companies really need to stay in Minnesota. It's just for Minnesota-based companies. So I can't imagine why we wouldn't move the Salk or Robbins bills forward to do this. This would be very, very beneficial to our high-tech industry and to our high-end research. So I'm hoping we can give companies another calculation method as these bills do, and I'm in full support of the David Salk bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Robbins.
Representative Davids is also a co-author on the Robbins bill.
Oh, the Davids-Robbins bill?
Yes, sir.
I would watch that. It might be another press release.
Yeah. Yes,
that one. Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a question of the testifiers from Medical Alley and the High Tech Association. Years ago when I used to chair the Education Division of Appropriations, worked closely with the High Tech Council in particular because their interest area was the research specials at the University of Minnesota. And in fact, the High Tech Council was originally an advisory council to the Institute of Technology at the University of Minnesota, and then they spun off and developed into what they are today. So my question is, are we better using those dollars to support the research and its basic research at the University of Minnesota, or using the tax credit? Because it used to be that the main agenda years ago with the High Tech Council and Medical LA was a spinoff years later, was to invest in those research opportunities at the U of M. And one of the reasons that I raised the question, if there's a research breakthrough as a result of public dollars, right, if it's through the University of Minnesota, they have the patent, and they can sell that patent and get royalties off it and so on. It's a more direct benefit, in a sense, to the investment that taxpayers are making. So I'm just curious as to what your reaction is. We always have limited numbers of dollars, so if we were to use those dollars, would we be better investing in the research specials at the U of M, and many of those specials fall into both categories here, or investing in a tax credit?
Oh, and I see Mr. Patrick is here also. And why don't we begin? Go ahead and introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, Bobby Patrick, Director of Government Relations, Medical Alley Association. Chair Carlson, I think supporting, you know the limited resources. I think supporting both is important. I think they accomplish different things. I think the, you know, the research at the University of Minnesota and other universities can be targeted at technology that isn't commercialized yet, new ideas, different forms of doing something, whereas the research and development at companies can improve on existing technologies in addition to developing new ones that fit along with what they're working on. The companies may also have a certain specialty and a certain kind of technology that the researchers at universities may not be pursuing. So I think it's important that to really have a robust research and innovation community and industry that that both are supported.
Mr. Dukic, did you want to add to that?
Mr. Chair, I agree.
Very good. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you recall, but my comments, I separated basic research when I referenced the University of Minnesota. And Mr. Patrick, you just referenced what I would call applied research, which is very different and very different in terms of how you approach the investments. And I want to make it clear, I'm all for investing in research. I think that's a good bang for the dollar. But I'll be upfront, if push came to shove, my preference would be to enhance the funding for the research specials at the University of Minnesota. To some degree, our state universities do some research, but it's generally applied research. But our main interest in basic research is the University of Minnesota, and has been for generations, and we've had, as a state, huge payback from that. And that's why I'm a strong supporter of investing in research. And I was just interested in what your take on, if given a choice, because both of your organizations have historically been strong supporters of research at the University of Minnesota. And sometimes we have to make those tough choices, if you will.
Mr. Dukic.
Mr. Chair and members, just to be clear, we certainly support the research at the University of Minnesota. And as Mr. Patrick mentioned, the research, the basic research at the University of Minnesota, I think accomplishes a different objective in some cases than the type of research being done at companies in the area. Basic research can take a really long time, and sure, it might lead to commercialization eventually, but the research and development activities at companies here can sometimes be on a much shorter time frame and lead to commercialization and much more quickly than some of the research coming out of the university. But that's not to say that one is more important than the other, because I think we need them both.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there with just, you know, we have limited resources, and there is a difference in Mr. Patrick's testimony when he referenced research in the companies. That sounded very much like applied research in my mind. Sure. And so part of the discussion here is whether we invest in basic research, which would be the mission of the University of Minnesota by and large, or whether we invest in applied research, and then in terms of who benefits from whatever the results of that research is. And at the university, my point is that clearly a public entity, the University of Minnesota and the state generally, when they do have a breakthrough with their research, the taxpayer benefits as well. But I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make that point. Both organizations are, in my view, presenting a good argument for investing in research. It's just where we invest that money is the point.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and as long as we're in this debate about effectiveness of research, I just want to comment that research by its basic nature is speculative in nature, and so it's very difficult to quantify or qualify whether or not a program is effective based upon a narrow amount of data in regards to whether or not it's worth the dollars put into it, because oftentimes research can lead to great discoveries, but it also can lead to running around in circles and not really achieving what it is. But they're all research that are valid in order to verify, you know, what works and what doesn't work. And so I think we need to really have sometime, maybe want to have a bigger debate or some place have a debate about whether or not we want to support research in general. But if we do, we have to then accept that it is speculative in nature, both the university as well as private sector. It's sometimes you're going to get something out of it and sometimes not. And so if we want to continue pushing the envelope and growing and developing new things, research has to be there. And I don't think anybody here has disagreed with that. It's just that I think we need to have a balanced approach. And this is a way in which we're just cleaning up the procedures and how to access that research dollars that have been available for previous years, and just making it easier for that to occur, not only for the people preparing it, but also for the revenue department to actually enforce it. So I think they're good bills. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. You know, it's interesting that the pacemaker was brought up, and I find that interesting, and the Post-it note was brought up too. And in my personal life, the Post-it note has been a horrible invention, because it seems like, almost without exception, every day when I come home, I either on the kitchen counter or on the refrigerator is another Post-it note, and my DDD list just gets bigger and bigger. But whatever. So a couple of interesting things here with regards to the comments from Chair Carlson and now Representative Petersburg. So, Representative Carlson, you talked about the royalties and so forth from research at the University of Minnesota. Is there some place, and Representative Petersburg used the word quantify, is there some place where we actually have a record of the royalties that have come back from research at the University of Minnesota, and we can actually see what, quote, the return on our investment is?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, it's been a number of years since I served on what we used to call the Education Division of Appropriations, and we had many different accounts, and the university was one, very different structure than what we have today. But when asked, the university could share with that committee at the time, and I'm sure they could today, what their income from various royalties are through the sale of those initiatives. One of the debates sometimes was if they had a major breakthrough, there were times when companies from out of state, and there was one company I remember that we had a debate at the time was from Japan that bought the royalties on some research at the University of Minnesota. They did get the income from it, but that did get kind of a reaction from our committee. They said, wait, shouldn't that have been a Minnesota company that got that opportunity? And they probably did have the opportunity to bid on or buy those royalties. I don't know quite how that works within the university, but But at any rate, we, in answer to your question, the short answer was that we were able to get that information when we were dealing with the research specials.
Representative Phoebe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, could you instruct staff to see if they can't round up that information?
Yeah.
I know it's a busy time for staff, but can we try to get our hands on that? I think that would be interesting and possibly useful.
Yeah. Yes, we can, Representative Phoebe.
Thank you. So then, the question in my mind, Representative Carlson, from that comment goes, do those royalty dollars go back to the U, or do they come back to the taxpayers? Because that's kind of, you know, one of the underlying questions here in what we're talking about right now.
Well, as
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, as I pointed out in my earlier comments, in the case of the University of Minnesota, it is a public entity. It's a public university, so when that revenue would go back to the University of Minnesota, it does impact on a public institution and therefore the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So does it go back into the used general fund or does it go back into a research fund?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're probably going down the road where we would almost need the University of Minnesota here to testify on where those dollars go, whether they go back into the department that actually did the research or whether they just go back into the research specials or the University General Fund. I don't have the answer to that question. As I pointed out, it's been a number of years since I chaired that committee, but some of the questions in the dialogue that are taking place here did take place within that committee at that point in time.
And Representative Fabian, we can add that to the inquiry also. Before you go, Representative Lestigard has a point to this.
It was just Mr. Chair. So coming from the Iron Range, we went from red ore to taconite, and that was the University of Minnesota that developed that process, and that process has paid dividends to the state of Minnesota for the last 70-plus years, and I think in the tune of billions of dollars, both in the school land trust and to our communities. So, but for the University of Minnesota developing that process, I think the Iron Range would look much different at this point.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, and don't misconstrue my comments. I'm not in any way suggesting that the university is not extremely important in terms of research. I think that we need to find a balance, and where that balance lies, I'm not sure, and hopefully the University of Minnesota is working to do the same things for copper nickel mining. I think that that's you know, something for the future that's going to pay huge dividends, not just to the Iron Range, but to all of Minnesota and, quite frankly, the nation. But I'll get to my point, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your tolerance. I think that we do need to invest in both the private sector and the public sector. As we've heard here, research by nature is speculative. It's somewhat risky. And private entities are assuming risk. I mean, they are. And we can have a whole long philosophical debate about how much risk is being taken by a public entity that's being supported by tax dollars. But I do believe that in the private sector, a significant risk is being taken. And I think that we need to culture, as Representative Salk says, that research in the state of Minnesota so that we can do good things like post-it notes and improvements in mining and even pacemakers. But I would also caution folks, and I can name four or five companies in my district that started in a garage, but I think that the vast majority of advancements that have been made in those industries have come outside of that garage when the building got bigger. And now there are more people to do more things to improve the suspension in the snowmobile. Not that I'm going to mention Polaris or Arctic Cat, but, you know, that's just the nature of the way those things go. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And fun fact, having a father that worked at 3M, the adhesive for the post-it note was originally discovered when they were looking for an adhesive to stick the tiles onto the space shuttle. So, and to piggyback on what Representative Carlson was saying, investment in research really is a multi-pronged approach. That's why we have different mechanisms like that R&D credit we're talking about today and the angel investor credit. I would really like to have us more focused on the outcome base, what Representative Loeffler had mentioned earlier. But my brother, I would just take one business that's growing quickly here in Minnesota, my brother-in-law's business, and he has both benefited from the R&D credit and the angel investor credit. And he told me that the angel investor credit helped him grow his new business, his second business in Minnesota here, much more quickly than the R&D did, and it was much more valuable. And I know that with these limited resources we have to make choices. And with research and development, just one thing I'd like to point out, a lot of the times with businesses, that old phrase, evolve or die. So there's an inherent need for a company to evolve and make those investments within themselves to grow. So where's that balance between that and bringing new things at market and that stuff we have to look at with our tax code and what we're going to do to incentivize. So just to throw that out there. Thank you.
Representative Gomez and then we've got Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just say a couple things. So to Representative Salk's point about the amazing work happening in Rochester, I guess, you know, I just got here. I went to Representative Mahoney because there's like a project in my district that needs some help and previously like it was through his committee that we got some of that. And, you know, it's like $1 million, I think, which is, to me, it seems like really a lot of money. And so I went and talked to Chair Mahoney and he said, well, you know, I'd love to help you out, but, you know, Rochester, the Mayo Clinic needs $30 million from me this year and apparently every year. And so I guess I just wanted to say that I think it's great that we support the innovative work that's happening at the Mayo Clinic, but I don't know that I think it would be difficult to discern that the R&D credit was the reason that a lot of that high-tech work was happening there. I think that when the public invests in infrastructure and in supporting, you know, anchor institutions like Mayo, that it has all of these ancillary benefits, including being a place that people want to do these kind of activities. So I just wanted to put that out there that I think it's important, you know, when looking at the effectiveness of this credit to really try to hone in on what exactly this has and has not spurred in terms of some of that innovation. And, you know, so in the office, the OLA report, it talks about the fact that the there's no explicit statutory purpose for the R&D credit. And that was sort of one of the recommendations, is that should really be part of the law, that there are improvements that need to happen to this. But it's not necessarily, from my perspective, putting a bunch more money into it if we don't have a clear way to evaluate its effectiveness. So when the OLA did their analysis, you know, absent that statutory justification or that purpose, they assumed that the intent was to create jobs, to increase research activity, and to attract and retain businesses in Minnesota. And while it did have some, you know, modest influence on that, the Office of the Legislative Auditor found that the growth was relatively, I'm quoting now, the growth was relatively small, and the credit did not pay for itself, as its statewide net fiscal benefits offset only a small share of the amount of credit claimed. And so I just think we have to take a really careful look, again, in the face of those, you know, those decisions that we have to make every day about how to have the most impact with a limited budget. And, you know, I was glad that Representative Listegard said the thing that he said, which was, but for this investment, right, by the U of M, this wouldn't have happened. And to me, that's a really important test for investing public resources like this is, we have to be able to make the argument to people who are struggling across our state that we're going to invest their hard-earned money in things that, you know, to kind of like create that activity that but for this investment would not take place. You know, the last thing that I just want to say is that I think I'm glad that we're talking about, you know, sharing risk, right, because the public is sharing the risk. But to Representative Carlson's point, it's like the public should also share in the benefit of that. And so when again, when we're investing public dollars, we have to look at both of those things. So thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just a comment, not a question.
Thank you. We're going to go to Chair Davids, and then we're going to allow Mr. Patrick to go with his prepared remarks. So Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a little aside here. My massive company was not started in a garage, but rather a basement, because in January and February, it's extremely cold. Mine was started in my basement. But that being said, the two Davids bills we're looking at today here, the difference is we're not taking consideration the leveraging of other funds. So when an OLA report says, well, this came out, and others have said that, well, you know, the state should share. And the state's sharing. The state's sharing just fine. When these companies go, they're making millions of dollars. The state of Minnesota gets their cut off the top every time. So in 2016, my good Senator Amy Klobuchar, when she's at the dedication for the 3M $150 million research and development facility, said that this is 8 football fields of innovation. Well, that's Minnesota, and that's the way it should be. In fact, this credit, the R&D credit, started in Minnesota. So why we're not lined up with the feds to give both entities a chance or to have companies be able to use both crediting methods, I'm just not sure why we're not there yet. It's probably the fault of the last tax chair, and we may guess. But with that being said, I think we need to know, and we are obviously on limited funds here, and towards the end of the session when we're in the smoke-filled rooms in the dark at night with high-priced lobbyists figuring this stuff out, I would direct a question to Mr. Patrick. Whether it be the investment or the angel credit or the two Davids bills here, which would Medical Alley prefer if we can only have one?
Very good. Mr. Patrick, if you could answer that question, then go ahead with your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Davids. Yeah. Since the R&D credit is already in place, I think I'll take the angel credit given that over this one. But
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, members, I think rather than go to my prepared remarks, I'll just if that's okay with you.
Here we go.
Representative Carlson raised a good point about the basic research. I think the basic research is really important to invest in, and it's really led to a lot of the innovation and health technology that we have in place now. I think the R&D credit allows the state to keep that basic research here instead of companies out of state capitalizing on it, and allows that research to grow and develop the jobs and the economic investment from those companies in Minnesota with the applied research rather than going to other states. So I think that's the dichotomy that we have to have along those lines. And, you know, Representative Loeffler mentioned the pacemaker and it developing in the small or in the garage. And, you know, it's the research and development afterwards that led it to go from its large size down to, you know, this big now. And the research and development credit has allowed that to happen in Minnesota and allowed that work to happen in Minnesota rather than in another state. And I think Representative Gomez, she brought up the OLA report and what they judged as how to measure it. And I think that while growth in jobs is important, what Representative Robbins noted on how those jobs are staying here because of the R&D credit rather than going to another state, I think is another way that the credit has to be measured. And without looking at how it retains jobs in Minnesota, is a disservice to the benefit that the R&D credit actually has in our state. So with that, Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to get back again to our discussion about what I said earlier. We do need to have a debate about why we want to develop research. And I think I heard some comments that maybe referred to the fact that research and development and the funding that we do for that is all about creating jobs for the research. And I want to say that's not my perspective. My perspective is that research is developed for the outcomes of that research and the jobs that are developed because of the outcomes of the research, not the research itself. You know, I'd go back to, you know, if we wanted to always quantify or qualify research and only have it if it's effective, Can you imagine what Thomas Edison would have done after the 500th element that he tried, filament he tried, and said, well, I'm not producing anything, I'm going to quit. That's not what research is about. Research is about taking the risk. And there's always going to be a certain number of research projects that don't achieve the outcomes that they want. Does that mean they were ineffective or not worthy of doing? I would disagree with that statement. I think it is important for us to do. And so here's a situation where we're paying a little bit of the research through tax credit for this versus a university in which we'd be paying the entire cost. There is certainly a difference there in the risk that's taken and leveraging of those dollars. Both of them are very extremely important, both for educational purposes as well as for developing up an opportunity to explore new things. So we need to do both. But I think this is an opportunity here where we can certainly grow that piece. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a couple of quick comments. The reference to paying the entire cost, when you're dealing with the research specialists at the University of Minnesota, you'll find that there's a lot of private matches and so on that go into the investments. And I suspect at least years ago, and probably true today, that the two organizations at the table probably have invested in some of that in providing matches. Comes from a variety of places. I remember one project that was up in the Iron Range. There was an 8-to-1 private-public match. So there's a variety of ways that research is funded. So to say it's all public would be not an accurate portrayal in my view. But I did want to mention that Representative Davids mentioned the basement. Representative Loeffler mentioned the garage. My grandfather had several copyrights and patents, and my grandmother used to complain about it being at the kitchen table.
Very good.
And it was the mop was one of them. Yeah.
They didn't have post-it notes.
No.
Representative, thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Representative Salk, please.
Thank you to the testifiers.
Representative Salk, Mayo is fairly large. What other states do they do business in, research in?
Representative Salk.
Well, obviously Florida and Arizona, they have two major facilities there. So in terms of other states, that's where they have major institutional investments. And I would say that with that goes a certain amount of research, because I don't think Mayo opens its business door without having some research that's taking place inside. I don't know if that got to what you were
Representative
fishing for.
Yeah, thank you. And I think you answered it very well. Thank you. So, and to the comment about public benefit and so forth and public dollars, I would ask rhetorically, where do public dollars come from? They come from the taxpayers. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Let's see, any other members? Before we take any other members or Representative Salk, is there anyone else from the audience that would like to testify on House Files 1445 and then 1455? Seeing none, Representative Robbins, if you would come forward. Representative Salk.
I'm just going to add this comment and let her wrap it up, because the point that I wanted to make, which I think is one of those, like, we talk about these things like the pacemaker and the garage thing that was invented in Apple and all of the different analogies of how this takes place. At Mayo right now, the researchers are walking outside of their Mayo job and lab and into a lab of all entrepreneurs. So right now, one of those companies is culturing the use of organic T cells, developing cells that then can be used and attached to the person's heart so that it generates new heart muscle to be able to counteract the idea of heart disease. So at some day, and there's no doubt in my mind that this kind of research that happens, and it is because that you can take it and you can take it from the nonprofit and you can take it into the for-profit world. So this is all part of tax stuff putting together, and yeah, this will be the salvation for Representative Davids.
I hope he heard that.
but they will someday have cell treatments that will repair a degenerative heart that is just completely falling apart. They will bring new muscle to that heart, and those are the kinds of things that we're getting from this difficult to pay for research. In my background, my cousin was a researcher at Stanford, never had a thing assigned to him for him to do. He was paid to just be there and think. It's weird, and we talk about, you know, well, this is such a wasteful endeavor. He was supposed to get up in the morning, consider the world and how it might be made better, and that's what they paid him for, and paid him quite well. So some research is done purely at the theoretical level. And I know we don't end up, from my cousin, we don't take one thing home from the expenditure of California paying his salary. So I think we also have to understand how broad and significant this research can be. So like someday that researcher, maybe working in an institution, maybe working independent of the institution, is going to continue to discover those kinds of either mechanical or organic things that are going to completely change our lives and add years to lives that are well-lived.
Anyone else? All right, let's go to closing comments then. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for this robust debate. I've really enjoyed it. One of my most fun things I've done at the legislature so far.
Representative Robbins, it's the Tax Committee.
I love that. So just to quickly address Chair Carlson's point, I would point out that under the qualifying research expenses, one of the aspects of it that includes qualifying is, sorry, I have to just make sure I'm reading it correctly. It's research done by nonprofits that does include contracting with the U of M. So I think one of the things we've seen in this discussion is the robust public-private partnerships at the U and in private industry, and that there's such tight collaboration in Minnesota. I think that's one of the reasons we have such a great research culture here. And the current structure of the R&D tax credit addresses that and supports that. So I think that's something members can take comfort in. And just to address another quick point that Representative Iwakim shared about her brother's story, I think it's really important. I also have an angel investor tax credit bill, Mr. Chair. And I think it's really important to realize that both of those tax credits are important for different stages of a business life. At the early startup stage, the angel investor credit can make a huge difference and can help create jobs here in Minnesota and also create really innovative companies that will stay here and do great research. But as they progress, as we see the original base of the credit is back from the 80s, as they progress, the research that they're building on becomes more useful to these companies. So I think the flexibility built into both credits and to the system of allowing the businesses to know what will work best for them and how to use it is what we're addressing here. And this bill just gives, both bills just give a little bit more flexibility by designing this alternative. So I really encourage the members to see it all as a bigger system and that they're not competing against each other, but they're supporting a really strong culture in Minnesota of great research. So I just want to remind everyone that the research and development tax credit only gives credit for new research. So it's not all they're spending in R&D. It's the incremental increase in R&D over a three-year look back. So I think that we're focusing on pushing new research here in Minnesota is the priority to keep in mind. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Representative Sock, any closing comments? And the only thing I will add is not only the importance of the R&D, but the importance of also education and developing kind of great minds that can think outside the box. You know, Henry Ford didn't set out to make the horse stronger or faster. He came up with the automobile. Thomas Edison didn't look at how I can improve the candle. He came up with, you know, the light bulb. So it's kind of the two working in tandem that really creates the innovation that spurs things forward. So thank you very much. Great discussion. Representative Fabian renews his motion to lay over for possible or probable inclusion into the tax omnibus bill, House File 1445. And then, who would like to move House File 1455? Chair Davis moves House File 1455 and to be laid over for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Representative Robbins. Thank you so much, Representative Sauk, members. Thank you so much. We'll hear the Representative Schultz bill tomorrow. Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, just a quick anecdote here. When Representative Sauk was talking about the new muscles, fibers for the heart and so forth, I leaned over to Representative Petersburg and I said, yeah, just think of the hole that's going to create in Social Security. And he fires back and says, well, that'll be offset with Medicare, the benefit.
Always thinking ahead here at the Tax Committee. Very good. With that, members, we've accomplished our task. The Tax Committee is adjourned.